put in my name and address.
I did that on my sheet. Edward and I are going to take notes at the same time as it's being recorded.
I don't think it's necessary.
We want to leave that with you. In fact, you know, we're here today, but if you have some other thoughts that come to you later, we welcome them.
I've had over 60 years to think about
that's it. Right.
Anything new is going to come up.
Well, why don't I start then, and I'll ask you, how old were you when you joined?
20.
Okay. So where and when, in fact, did you sign up?
In Montreal, and it was, if I remember right, early May 42, when the war got started.
May 1942. Why did you join?
It was the right thing to do.
And what unit were you assigned to?
As I said, general service. I didn't make any choices.
Okay, so it's called general service, you said.
Well, let's take it in smaller steps. Where was the recruiting center? Is it still at Bishop and St. Catherine?
No, it was in across the bridge, Longueuil.
Longueuil?
Oh, yeah.
Longueuil, yeah.
So there was a personnel center there, and you went, and they gave you some tests, and and they issued you a uniform there?
Yes, and gave me all the shots, and told me I could go home for a couple of days, and that was it.
And then where did they have you report after that?
To Longueuil.
Back to Longueuil?
Yeah. DD5.
And so you did basic training at Longueuil?
No, they didn't do basic training. They equipped you and gave us a little drill and eventually sent people off to basic training. But there was such a flood of recruits coming in. It was at a time when conscription for home service came into effect. That generally speaking, one could expect to spend 3-4 weeks in Longueuil before being sent off for training.
So in your case, you spent, well, let me get this straight, there was no basic training as such?
Not in Longueuil, but it did take us out, right turn, left turn, this sort of thing.
And where did they send you for basic?
They didn't.
They didn't?
I'll tell you what happened. We were out in parade, and there were at least more than 100 new recruits. And the sergeant major called out all high school graduates one step forward. I was in the first line, so I took a step forward, and apparently nobody else did. You have to remember, this was a time when graduating grade school was what people aimed for. And then the sergeant major told me to report to him in the orderly room. And he asked me if I can type. I said, very slowly, 19 words a minute was the standard. And he asked me if I could spell. And they gave me some daily orders and told me what to do, and that became one of my jobs. The other job was doing passes.
What high school did you graduate from?
Sir George Williams. I went to Baron Bean up to the end of grade 10, and then I decided to go to St. George.
But it was a college then, or?
No, it was a high school, but they also had a college.
Huh.
Was it downtown?
Yeah.
So the sergeant major must have thought he died and gone to heaven to find you.
Well,
imagine a guy who could type and spell.
He never put it in these words, but We got along well.
Okay.
Sergeant Major Barron, he started his career in India.
Wow.
Spit and follow.
So you stayed in Longueuil for...
Well, at one point, I was told to report to where new arrivals came in. And that was in the summer, and I had a huge tent, long tables, and documents all over the place. And if you were looking for a particular person, excuse me, you started at one end of the table and you went until you found it. So after a couple of nights, I had, since I was writing passes, I had a permanent pass for myself. But that, that evening I had no money and I had no reason to go into town. So I went to the tent and I put everything in alphabetic order. Next morning, the sergeant major said, "Who did that?" "I did." "What'd you do it for?" "That had nothing else to do yesterday." So then we set up a system, you know, we had to go through the 7 tests, and we divided our documents. At one time, there were hundreds of them, maybe more. And in the morning, they had me called to roll, because at that point I was a corporal, because I was the only one that could deal with foreign names. And invariably, when I finish calling the roll, and I'm talking about 8, 9, even 1,000 people in the assembly hall, there'd be 1 or 2 or 3 come over, "Where do I go, corporal?" So each morning I explained to them in English or French, when your name is called, you lift your arm and you say, "EC," or "Yes," as the case may be. So one morning I was calling the roll, and there was Colonel Eckenberg.
Oh, yes.
And some more brass, and they called the Corporal Yasser Serkis. Anyway, the years went by. I met my wife. She was in the Air Force. And that lasted for near 3 years. And
so you became part of the Longueuil establishment,
yeah,
bringing in new recruits?
Yeah. Well, a lot of them were brought in by the RCMP. And at that point, it was winter, and they moved us into a T-hot. No, H-hot, sorry.
H-hot, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if they still do, but had shelves on top, metal shelves, so this was our shelving. And the conditions were better than in the tent. And one day, the officers and the sergeant major, I think they were all called to do a week of training. So at that time I was a lance corporal. So some group of brass decided to visit. They came into our office, you know, came to attention and all that. And looks at one pile of paper, "What's that?" I answered him. "This." I answered him. He said, "Now, if you die today, who's going to know what to do with you?" And, you know, I wasn't really a soldier. I said, "Sir, if I die today, I don't really care what happens. I'm doing the best I can with what I have." So they gave me another strike. But that was the end of it, because I was Category A, and that's about it.
Well, your work was certainly appreciated. can see that.
I think so. Yeah. And another reason they kept me on District 85 main headquarters was in the Sunlight Building in Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
And once in a while they would call and they would say that Jean-Paul Bernier go through your routine. Well, they had no papers left. The ones that were accepted, the documents went with them, and the ones that were rejected, I don't really know where the papers went, but we didn't file them. So I got $20 from the canteen fund and had some 3x5 or cards printed up. And we made an entry for each one that reported, and the final disposition.
Right.
We had a carpenter, made his boxes, eventually we had a whole bunch of them. And when they called from DD5 to ask about somebody, I would write down the name, runner beside me would rush to get a card. I would chat for a moment or two, and the car was there. So it was great fun.
Yeah.
It was a good system. It worked. So.
So you not only operated the system, you improved it.
As a corporal, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
There was no system, and it's nobody's fault. It was just new. They weren't used to having. They weren't prepared to deal with the numbers that came in. And those who came in by the RCMP were turned over to military police. They brought them to me. And my holding cells were the individual toilets, you know, no doors, but had some runners guarding them. And when things slowed down and I wasn't needed anymore, I went up to basic training, and I did my advanced training, and then Victory Europe happened.
Where did they send you for your basic? St. Jerome?
St. John's. Quebec.
Oh, Saint-Jean, Quebec, right, yeah. On the Richelieu, Saint-Jean-de-Richelieu.
Yeah, and advanced was in Ypres, Washington.
Be happy to know I was in Ypres Wash a few years ago, and there's still some of the wartime buildings. The H huts are still there, but they've put some money in recent years and built some really very functional, good, solid concrete buildings. And training goes on there without stop.
It's my alma mater.
Yeah.
It didn't go by. And when that was over, I was put on a draft for Vernon, B.C., jungle training.
Mm-hmm.
And before the draft took off, Hiroshima and Nagasaki happened. And I put in for my discharge as quickly as I could. I had a wife and a child. And I will say that when I wasn't needed in the office anymore, I did apply for parachute. And I passed all the physical tests, but the psychologist said, you better not go, you don't want to die with newly married and a young child. So I lost my chance to have a good story.
What year did you get married?
44, March 44, 63 years ago. I think I answered all your questions.
Oh, no, not yet. Just a minute. So when did you leave? Like, what, you served from 1942 until?
45. I'm not sure of the month. Late August, early September, somewhere like that.
Now, when you entered, what rank did they give you?
When I entered?
When you joined up.
I don't get it.
What rank?
Private.
Oh. And when you left, what rank were you then?
Corporal. With trades pay, $1.95 a day. And $30 for being married, and $12 for our first child. We were well off, you know. About $102 a month, and it covered everything. No.
I never heard your father say that. He was married and had a child.
Because that allowance went straight to mom. Dad was overseas.
I never heard mom say that either.
Oh, not that they were well off.
Yeah. No, Ed's father was in the mill. When he joined up, he was married and had a child. But I didn't hear, you know, they... Anyway, okay.
Oh, there was extra pay for... if you were married, and so much per child. You couldn't live on... It wasn't a custom for women to go out and work in those days. I mean, the rare ones did. And we didn't wait too long to get our first child started. So she got a discharge from the Air Force. I came home every night for dinner and left early to be on time. It's a good life.
Where were you living?
Montreal.
First was on Bishop Street.
Oh, yeah, it's Montreal. That's it. Montreal first, and after it was Longueuil, and Montreal again.
How did you get to work from Montreal? Like from Bishop to Longueuil was the bridge?
Oh, streetcar.
Streetcar?
And at the bridge... Just on the other side of the brick. Yeah. Never had to wait for a lift, you know.
See, when you were in the service, you didn't tell. You didn't need a taxi. Right. When they say it, that gave you service. People were very nice.
I believe car fare was four for a quarter.
Yeah. So, car fare. That's a Montreal term.
Yeah, so, you know, it didn't... hurt our budget too much. Occasionally I was on duty, on night duty, and took turns, you know.
What did you do when you left the service?
Well, I got a job that paid me $40 a week. So that was good money, but the work I was expected to do was not pleasant. This man was putting together one of his products for various mirrors, small ones, portable. And what he did was get to a janitor and put a machine into his basement and then supplied him with parts, and he had to put a rivet in or drill a hole or whatever. And it was paid so much for
piecework.
Yeah. So whenever somebody was free in the house, they didn't count hours. They just went down and punched away. And I was supposed to cooperate, coordinate the operations. I didn't like that. I stayed with them for 6 weeks. And I decided to go out on my own. My father was very upset with me. You're irresponsible. I got a wife and a child. And so you stay with him and you work your way up to 75, which I was good money in those days. And how did I get started? Oh, okay. While I was in the army, x-rays that each one had to get were in a full-size sheet of acetate, some plastic, covered with some gel.
Yeah.
And it was just lying there. Nobody wanted it. Or they weren't supposed to. They had to keep it with the files. And at the same time, I knew some people that made wallets and things, and they needed plastic windows. And folded, you know. Soldiers kept a lot of pictures, their families did. So I went, I think it was the King Edward Hospital, TB Hospital.
TB Hospital, yeah.
And they offered to sell them to me for a cent each. And Jacqueline's uncle was the vice president of... Yes, the pharmaceutical company.
Three big companies in Montreal.
So I went to see Mr. Murray and asked him, how can I dissolve this stuff? Actually, it was hot water and elbow grease, but pretty simple. So I set up a little industry in our laundry room.
Recycling these X-ray films.
Recycling, and then you had to hang them up with two clothespins to dry. Otherwise, they would stick together. And I had them cut. I think the standard size was 3 by 4 inches. And there was a demand for it. Right? Just prior to I don't remember exactly what. So when I got out, I found that wartime assets had big rolls of this stuff. It was 3 1/10 of an inch, and they stamped out anti-gas glasses.
Oh, right, yeah.
They were clear, transparent. And they wanted something like $1,000, which I didn't have. But I was able to borrow. And I did very well with it. Got a trade directory, and all the leather goods manufacturers, sent them a sample. Well, that was a start. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and when I started on my own, the Army had a program where they gave you $22 a week, either for farming or fishing or starting any kind of business. Oh. So having no other income, well, we had a little money coming in for the Army for a short period, I applied for the program. I was getting $22 a week. After 5 or 6 weeks, I got a call from whoever ran this operation and suggested that they send somebody over to help me organize bookkeeping and so on. I said, you know what, stop sending me the checks. He says, why? You still have 40-odd coming. I said, look, it'll always be there. Ah. Right now I'm self-supporting. I don't need your help. So I never went back. But we were able to rent a house in one of their projects.
You won't view that?
It works hard.
What were your best memories of that time, meeting you?
Tell me, off the record, tell them how we met.
Oh, working together. They sent me, the Air Force sent me. I was in the recruiting center. And they sent me to Longueuil to get the best. The best man is supposed to come to the Air Force.
Ah.
So I didn't get any men for this. The first thing I said, would you like to join the Air Force? Well, what was that? Well, never in my life.
Jamais la vie.
I'm a soldier. No. Finally, I decided that it was no use. But I said, they said, well, you come back. I said, mission accomplished. I got my men.
You got your
men. The Air Force didn't get any
men. You did.
And my name, the Air Force got one man, one from the Army, my husband.
That was a plan that didn't have a chance, but the day before Jacqueline came there, Captain Haynes, who was our commanding officer, called me in for tomorrow. There'll be a MAW from the Air Force reporting here. None of that.
It's like a challenge.
So, so the next day she came in and organized a table and chairs for her. And I was the person who selected the most likely, well, they had to have a certain intelligence to do well in their intelligence test and so on. And walk them over with the documents to her. And the reason why I was the only one that stepped forward when they asked for high school graduates is because the high school graduates went to the Air Force or the Navy. So, in a way, it worked out well.
Yeah, of course. Isn't that nice?
Even in the Air Force, we have the, in Montreal, there were maybe one was a corporal and the other one a sergeant, there were two women. They could read and write French, but it was not easy for them to talk. And I was the only one from Logan to Montreal, both languages, because I always work both languages.
Bilang is very important.
Montreal.
Oh, do you have time for coffee?
Yeah,
that'd be very nice.
Cappuccino?
Oh, I drink tea. I don't drink cappuccino, sir.
You can have
drink tea. What is the tea?
You want herbal tea?
Oh, I have a good tea.
Oh yes.
Oh yes. Yes,
from Vietnam.
Somebody will give it to me, and I'm very proud.
Well, it's green tea from Vietnam.
And I bought you a cappuccino?
S'il vous plaît.
Okay, two cappuccino, one tea. Black tea. Mm-hmm. I have white tea, you know.
White tea?
It needs no color.
Are you willing to experiment?
No. I would never give that to it. I didn't have it. Somebody gave it to me. I said, white tea. I said, I like to drink it. I said, here's the bag.
You didn't take it?
It's awful.
Oh.
It's no, it's not.
Well, you make a cup of tea and I'll drink your tea.
Okay.
I guess we have a couple more questions for you guys. What about any bad memories? Are there bad memories from those times?
Not really. The only time if it's a bad memory, it was on Saturday when they were Friday after 5, I'm not sure, when there was hardly anybody left in camp. And I got an order to send a private to the officers' quarters. At a function of some kind. And looked around, there was only this one guy there, so both of them had to go. And he wasn't happy with it, so he took a swing at me and I grabbed his arm. So he didn't connect. And somehow, an officer, Jean-Jacques Beaugrand Champagne,
wow.
Once told him I'd be worth 10 of you. Make him sign a couple 100 passes and he wouldn't miss out one letter.
Wow.
Nice guy. But he says to me, are you going to put him in charge? I said, well, sir, the young guy disappointed. He had plans. I said, if you don't put him in charge, I'll put you in charge. Not much alternative to
yeah. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. But no, I had a good time too.
From the Jewish aspect, were you aware that Canada didn't allow Jews in?
None are too many. But,
were you aware then?
Well, I'm an illegal immigrant. We received our immigration papers through bribery, but you don't have to put it on the record if you want.
Yeah. Well, where were you born?
Oh, I came here when I was 12 years old, so that's the 33.
But anyway, that whole, were you aware of the situation of the Jews in Europe?
Not until, '44. I was just watching a program yesterday where towards the end the Germans were so afraid that the story was going to come out that he set up a model camp in Theresienstadt, I think, and they had the people well. They had some opera that they performed. Beautiful choir, they had some recordings. And so when the Red Cross came, they're living in a beautiful village, they're well fed, they're well dressed. I'm pretty sure that Roosevelt and Churchill and the others knew about it. There were only vague rumors until after victory. We had no contact with our relatives. None of them survived. Well, one did because the Russians sent her to Siberia with the two younger children, which seemed like something terrible, but it saved, you know, saved her life. Yeah.
But it sounds like you grew up in a secular household.
My mother kept kosher to the extent that she buy meat from a kosher butcher, and she fast on Yom Kippur. But when it came to your site, English calendar, Hebrew calendar didn't make too much difference. They didn't go for sure.
We're learning through this process of interviewing that the socialist movement was very strong in those days. So there were people that were maybe Zionist but not religious.
Jews never unite on one around one issue. So there were the left, it's called Paul-Lutzian, and the far right was Jabotinsky, and the far left, the far Mitzian, and the Shomer HaTzair, religion was not a factor. Now we're do you understand Yiddish?
I do.
Well, there was so you know who Yudel Leib Peretz is. And I think it's he who wrote the poem, Weiße Schwarze Rete Bräune Mischgefarbt Moist Zusammen Alle Kinder Alle Menschen Seinen Gleich Schwarze Farbe Mischgefarbt Moist Zusammen Alle Menschen Seinen Gleich Von den Tappen und den Mammen. Did you get it?
Yeah.
And that's what I believe.
So that's a very avant-garde way of thinking. That was a time when there was a lot of racism.
Yeah, but it takes two. Mm-hmm. We believed. The other guys did. Very little social contact with non-Jews. And then lived
the but first. In the army? There were
Jews? No, the army, plenty of Jews. And, Quebec was not free of anti-Semitism. One evening, we went out to pick up scrap. We asked the public to put scrap out on the sidewalk. I was wearing a full cover. We were all wearing full overalls. When we came back, 9 or 9.30. They served us a special dinner. There was two French guys sitting beside me, and one said to the other, my French is terrible, but he said, c'est tout pour un boucher de juif. I looked at him. I said, I'm a juif. How much do you think I made today for going out with you? That's a put down, but it didn't change him. Many factors haven't. In the Laurentians, and on the resort, Jews and dogs not welcome. But we started life in Canada in a small town called, at that time a small town called Granby, in the township. And I was the only immigrant, you know, didn't speak English and so on. They were all very, very helpful.
How did you like Granby?
Because one of my uncles was there. That's how the bribery came about. And he was their only contact.
Sure. So he was the first that came?
Pardon?
He was the first of the family that came?
Well, some of her family came in the 19th century.
Oh.
But the connection got very far.
Yeah.
But the first of our branch, he went to the United States. And I'm not sure of the year, but it was before I was born, and I'm almost 86.
So we're getting to the end of our list of questions, but two more, actually. Do you have any message for our youth today about war, about your experiences?
I send my message on my computer every week. But young people today are not aware, you know, it's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan, and no major concern, and those who are go to anti-war. They don't see the connection between what's happening in the Islamic world and now in Europe.
Mm.
Do you have any artifacts left over from your service?
I may have a picture of myself in uniform. We moved here about 3 years ago from a big house, almost twice as big. So some things may still be here, and I didn't find them. I wonder, because there's a picture of Jacqueline and a picture of me, 8 by 12 or 11.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I don't know where you are.
Mm. In this program book, along with the biographies, we'd like to put a picture of the veteran.
The only one I have is when I was in uniform.
That would be perfect. And if we could get a contemporary, we could take your picture now as well, put them side by each.
Let him see the ravages of time.
No, but this is part of the lesson, isn't it?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Can I take a shot?
Go ahead.
I remember
it's
now, Max, either you emailed me, I remember now, just when you mentioned about you send out your message by email, Nikki forwarded me your name, didn't she? Nikki Vasek.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. And now I remember you sent me an email asking about the project and saying you had a list of email addresses.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, it's coming back to me. Yeah.
But I haven't kept my list up. I haven't updated it with the last directory. And the best list with the Federation, and they have an office at the JCC.
Yeah. So I might have asked you if you knew of other veterans.